Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey Podcast. By the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here today with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David.
How you doing?
No, pretty good for a Friday afternoon. Had a little hailstorm roll through. Otherwise, it's been real nice. Welcome to Alberta.
Fairly short podcast today. Oilers just signed Drake Cajula. 2 years, $1.5 million per. I mean, I haven't read a lot of the reaction on the Twitter sphere, but I understand there's some people who are pretty somewhat grumpy about the deal. I mean, I haven't seen a lot of that, mainly because I mute a lot of people. So the people who tend to be super grumpy about everything Shirelli does, I tend not to listen to anymore. But what do you think of the... Have you seen much grumpiness? And
Well,
what's the general criticism then?
It's an overpay. That's the standard response to just about any signing, it seems like. I wonder how much of that goes on in everywhere, and that everybody has sort of this lowball idea of where they'd like to see a player fit in on the pecking order, and then when it does come through, there's other factors at play, and it gets driven up a little bit.
Bruce, I actually think that kind of reaction's quite rare. It only happens in every NHL city where they actually give a shit about hockey. But there's about 10 markets that don't give a crap about it at all. They barely pay attention, and they're the only, they don't react. So I think every market, and every year, because the cap goes up, there's always a little bit of adjustment, like, whoa, what's going on here? And it seems like everybody gets overpaid.
Well, yeah, and they always do. I mean,
when Taylor Hall got his $6 million a year, Bruce, I remember people freaking out.
Yeah.
When Nugent Hopkins got $6 million. Like, there was that reaction at that time. I mean, Hall's contract now. Look at Nugent Hopkins' contract.
The cap is always higher than you remember it is, because it's gone up since last year. And if it's a multi-year contract, it's going to go up further in the future, right? And that kind of thing gets factored in there. I mean, to me, $1.5 million for Cajula is a bit of an overpay, but I'm not going to lose a lot of sleep over it. I guess the bigger objection is those people who think the Oilers should have moved on from the player and go out and find someone better. Like, you know, they grow on trees out there.
That's what's at the bottom of it, I think, actually, is there's a lot of people who really don't like Drake Cajula as a player. Mm-hmm. And I'm not in that camp. There's a number of critiques, like they should have played Anton Slapyshev. If only Anton Slapyshev had been given the chances that Drake Cajula got, everything would have been different for Slapyshev, and Cajula didn't earn it, and Cajula's this, that, and the other thing. I mean, I think he really was, Cajula was really terrible, like objectively atrocious as a penalty killer. Maybe the worst penalty killing forward in the NHL last year, on the worst penalty killing team. And there was a couple other players in the running for that award on the Oilers, but he was just terrible. But even strength, though, he's a useful player. Like, he's got some offensive skills. You know, he's not big in the defensive zone. He's not as good as he needs to be yet as a consistent, but I think he can be an effective defensive player. He can put the puck in the net now and then. So I'm okay with him having him as a fourth line, third line option.
Yeah. Well, if he's a fourth line option, $1.5 million is too much. If he's a third line option, then sure. And I think he's somewhere in between there. He's a bottom six. He's proven himself as a bottom six. It's possible that we could still be, you know, see an upside that takes him into the 20 goal range. I don't think that's a ridiculous. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying it might happen. On the other hand, I mean, defensively, he has a skill set that he should be good if he ever gets himself a little bit under control. Like, he's to me, he's a bad defensive player. He has lots of trouble in his own zone. He can really get beat bad one-on-one, especially in the corner. And that leads to, you know, mismatches and right in the net front and stuff. Like, there's a few plays that just wound up right in the net because Cajula got owned on the corner boards. And that, not just on the penalty.
Your numbers, mm-hmm. You're fair enough, Bruce. And I'm just looking at some of the numbers that we kept this year. So we track major mistakes on grade A scoring chances against. Jonathan Willis, myself, and you tracked that this year and came to consensus view on each scoring chance play. And we had Kajula as the worst defensive winger. And, you know, by a significant amount. So he played 782 even strength minutes and he made 40 major mistakes on grade A chances. And that works out to about, that works out to about 0.77 per game. So yeah, a game being 50 minutes of even strength time. And so he's at 0.77. And Lucic was the next worst, and he was at 0.65. There's a bunch of guys in the 0.6 area, Cassian.
It's a big gap.
Yeah, that is a big gap. And the best player for limiting such, not making that kind of mistake was Pakarinen down at 0.35 per game. Pakarinen. And then Puljujärvi at 0.48 and Maroon at 0.50. Wow. So there's kind of a group of Pakarinen, Puljujärvi, and Maroon who did okay. Then there's a bunch of guys, Lucic, Camilleri, Aberg, Cassian, who weren't good. And then there was Kajula who just as you have pointed out, was awful. So I'll give you that. Like,
well, that actually gives me a little bit more faith in our actual staff in the sense that it matches the eye test. And
what, your faith wasn't through the roof, Bruce?
Well, it is, but you know, there's always a test. And when your stat tells you Oscar Klefbom is the second best player in the NHL, maybe you have to look at it.
And our stat never said that. I just want to make that clear.
If our stat tells us that Drake Kajula is the worst defensive winger on the Oilers, I'm buying that outright because that matches what I saw.
Who would you? So here were the top offensive wingers, and the same thing. Like, these are the guys making the major passes and shots that lead to grade A scoring chances, the most dangerous scoring chances. And there's three at the top. Patrick Maroon, Drake Kajula, and Jesse Puljujärvi were the three at the top. And then there's a couple kind of in the middle, Lucic and Camilleri, Aberg. And then, you know, just below that is Slepyshev, Cassian, and Pakarinen's way down at the bottom again.
Yeah, Pakarinen was a no-event player. And as such, he had some value because no-event players do have value in situations, and especially in the Bettman Point NHL, it's a point I'll harp on. No event is good in the Benton Point era. He was, I'm going to miss him a little tiny bit, but not a lot because he wasn't that exciting to watch.
Great on the PK, man. He was their best PK forward.
Excellent. Kajula was like, just got awful on the PK, as you say, especially at home.
So we see kind of an okay attacker. So Maroon, Puljujärvi, and Kajula aren't good attackers. I don't think last year they were okay. Mm-hmm. And then there's a bunch of guys who just weren't very good at all, is how I would put it, like from below average to well below average. So Bruce, the title of this podcast is, you know, something about what are the Oilers going to do with their woeful wing situation? And I think Kajula, I mean, players can get better defensively.
Yes.
It's harder to teach offensive skill. It's harder to teach offensive creativity. It's harder to teach a guy to, you know, be able to score goals, find spots to score goals. And I think Kajula has a little bit of that, at least, and enough of that to be a third line winger in the NHL. If he can just increase his defensive efficiency by getting that head on a swivel, reading, you know, keeping himself on the right side of the puck, back checking hard and taking the right man on the back check, just really think about it, concentrate, make that a priority, make it maybe his top priority, because the offense is going to come if he takes care of the defense. Then Drake Kajula can be an NHL hockey player, you know, and a guy who we might well be really happy who signed for $1.5 million a year, because he's a solid third line winger, not just kind of marginal.
Let's hope. I mean, the gamble is that he makes further progress, because the player that we had last year, you know, he has his uses, but I'm not sure that that's a player that's going to help you win. Like, is above average for his role at that price point.
I agree with defense young. Like that.
He's young, and there's certainly room for him to make positive steps. I mean, step back a minute. Fernando Pisani, who was a college player that came up through the Oilers system, By this point in his career, he hadn't even played in the NHL yet. I don't think he even played a game through two AHL seasons. I'd have to look it up to be sure, but I think he spent the better part of 3 years down there. So, of course, he was a little bit more polished, an all-around player by the time he got up. And he still needed to do more polishing while he was in the NHL. But it's unfair. Like, the college boys, if they go straight into the NHL, man, that is a hell of a jump. And there's going to be growing pains. And some of them make it, and some of them just sort of show promise. But, they hit their ceiling, which was a concern Kurt Levens, our colleague, had in his season review of Kajula, was maybe he's already close to his ceiling, and what we see is what we got.
For some reason, the name David Oliver keeps popping in my head when I think of Kajula. And let me just quickly Google.
I remember David Oliver
because he was like a slender, offensively skilled college hockey player, right? Who came on with the Oilers. Let me see here. Let me get the right one here. And I got the wrong one. There's lots of David Olivers in Hockey DB. Is he born in 71? Probably. Here we go. This is him. He played, he ended up playing 2 years with the Oilers. In his first year, he got 30 points in 44 games.
Yeah, I remember 94, that. It was hot, especially
95.
The first half of the year.
The next year, he got 39 points and 20 goals in 80 games.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was kind of done as an NHLer. He played like little bits of each season. So after a 20-goal season, he was traded by the Oilers. He got one goal in 17 games and then was traded away to the Rangers. He got two goals in 14 games. Combined that next year. And then after that, he was just mainly an AHL player. So when I see Kajula, I saw, that Oliver, he sure had a promising start. And we were all pretty high on him back in 94, 95. Never panned out, though.
Yeah.
So Kajula's got a show. He's really got to bear down defensively.
Looking up Fernando Persani, and don't take me wrong, I'm not saying he's a similar player. I'm just looking at the career curve and comparing.
Yeah.
Fernando Persani played 4 years in Providence College, and he played 2.5 years in Hamilton Bulldogs, 172 AHL games. And only then did he come up halfway through his third pro season. And he was an NHLer from then on. And whereas Drake Kajula, he's played 127 pro games, and every single one of them has been in the NHL. So some of those growing pains are
That's right in front of us.
And, some of this is on the Oilers, but then some of it is when you're competing for these college free agents, promises get made. And if you want to get the next college free agent, then you better keep the promises you made to the last one. So you have to really pick your spots. Obviously, they like this player, and they went out on a limb for him, and they certainly gave him every opportunity in the NHL right away. And to me, he's still got a ways to go.
Yeah, he didn't get that time. He didn't get the full 4 years. What did he get, 2 years in college or three?
He got four.
He did, eh?
He got four? Yeah, he was at the University of North Dakota. And he was on a terrific line with Brock Besser and Schmaltz there, the young fellow in Chicago, both first round draft picks.
Is it Nick or Jordan? Which one is it?
Nick, I think.
One of them.
Schmaltz. anyway, he was, and he took huge advantage of that, and that made him one of the top college free agents. So they signed him with, a 2-year contract with even a nice bonus in it that they had to put in to win the player. And so at that point, you're not going to say, okay, now that we got you, Drake, doesn't matter what we said, we're going to send you down to the AHL for 2 years because we think you need it, because, you just can't do that. So, cost of doing business. This is why you'd rather draft him and have a little more control, like Fernando Persani.
He after his first year in Edmonton, people were pretty high on him, mainly on the strength of a good little run of games in the playoffs where he looked good on a line with Connor McDavid. He can skate and he's got a good shot. I listened to both Ryan Rashog and Ray Ferraro on the Kajula signing, and they both said the same thing, that they like him best when he's out there hitting. And I think that they're right, that his offensive game starts to work when he's very aggressive and out there hitting. But, I really think that the main issue with Kajula isn't that offensive game. Sure. He needs to hit, but he often does that. The main issue was what you just pointed out there. It's this defensive play. on the penalty kill and at even strength. He's got to get it going there and become, frankly, he's got to become a kind of a shutdown player with his offensive talent. If he wants to really get a job in the NHL full time, he's just got to become a guy who excels at the defensive game, who thinks about it, who has that as his kind of his primary mindset when he's on the ice. And then the offense will flow out of that.
You want him to be Todd Marchand. So, right? I mean, that's the ideal comparable player in terms of style of play.
Cogliano, Marchand.
See, well, he's a long way from that now. Yeah. But he does have some of those attributes.
Yeah. So maybe he'll figure this out though himself, and become that player.
Let's hope so. I know that cap friendly. They have a function or tool, I guess they call it, for comparables. And the top comparables they had for Drake Caggiula were Sven Andrighetto, who scored 22 points and was minus 15 for Colorado this year, and they had a 2-year deal for $1.4 million. That is a nice sort of similar stat line, and Brett Ritchie of Dallas, and Johan Larson of Buffalo, and Andrew Kopp of Winnipeg. I mean, we're not talking about outstanding, brilliant players here, and most of them are in that, at least the first three of those are right in that $1.5 million. So I guess I can make the case they're all overpaid. I don't know.
I'm not saying, like, that's, of course, as a fan, I wish they could sign him for the league minimum.
Give him the Cara deal. Let's move on.
That said, he did score 13 goals, and that's worth something. And he's a good bet to get better, because I do think his defensive game can improve. And the other interesting thing is obviously the coach, McClellan, really likes this player. Mm-hmm. Based on the opportunity that he has got both on the power play and on the penalty kill. Now that turned out, especially the penalty kill stuff, just was a mess, and he was a big part of it. But maybe, maybe there's something about Caggiula in terms of his work ethic, how he fits in on the team, being a team player, that McClellan is seeing, that gives him hope and wants to keep giving this player opportunities. Cause this is what the coach is saying with his usage. Hopefully the coach is right.
Yeah, well, he's a feisty guy, and most coaches like that. He likes to stick his nose in. He was, I think, second among Oilers forwards in hits last year. Only Lucic had more. And some of them were effective hits that actually, separated people from the puck. And, in his good shifts, he creates a lot of chaos. The trouble is, in his bad shifts, he creates a lot of chaos. If you follow me. And minus 13, that much maligned old stat, but it's reflected in all the other, goals for percentage and so on. It suggests that there was more of the second kind of shift than the first kind. And he's got to clean that up, because you can have players, if they're lousy defensively, they can score 25 goals and not help you.
Well, the other thing in terms of signing this player is the Oilers need some wingers, and they got to make bets on someone, and he's a fairly solid bet to be at least he's a solid bet, I think, at least a coin flip to be a useful third line winger. So he's a kind of a 50-50 bet there, and he's to be a solid fourth line winger. He's probably like a 90% chance of doing that. The issue is his salary if he's a fourth liner. So the other winger, Bruce, that we're looking at, everyone's obsession, is Milan Lucic. And this was kicked off because the rumors started up last week, but on the weekend, I think it was on Sunday, Elliot Friedman put up on his 31 Thoughts the quote. He said, "I'd heard rumors Lucic asked for a trade, but that was denied. However, it's clear he and the owners are working together to gauge interest. It doesn't look like an easy trade to make without taking back a big contract, but the team seems confident there will be a fit." And that just set things into overdrive all week. It's been Lucic nonstop on Twitter and in the blog posts, including blog posts for me. And
You wrote three or four yourself, didn't you, Dave?
Bruce, and Friedman followed up.
Page view gold. Eh? Yes.
Well, it's the
people are interested. I mean, that's our job. I make light of it, but a very real sense. You want to write about what people are talking about.
I'm also interested. It's like fascinating to me, the trade deals that writers in other cities come up with, like what the valuation is of Homer fans and reporters in other cities, and what the valuation is of him in Edmonton. And Friedman came out this week with another comment on the radio in Vancouver, saying essentially Lucic doesn't want to play in Canada anymore, and his wife didn't like the criticism that was going on here. So you know, we kind of now have a better sense of the reason, some of the reason that Lucic is open to a trade. I think it's really a great sign, though, Bruce, that there isn't some kind of demand. I mean, it would be crazy for Lucic to demand a trade, because he's a very difficult person to trade. But it sounds like he's open to that. If the team can make it work for him and his family, that's great. But it also sounds like if Lucic has to come back to the Oilers, that's also going to be something that he can get his head around. And I see that in all the hockey insiders in Edmonton, you know, the Bob Stauffer, Spector, Rashad Gregor, kind of their first fallback position is, you know, he could come back to the Oilers and rebound. That's what they say. So I think that's actually planned. The most likely thing to happen is that Milan Lucic will be back with the Oilers. I think it's highly unlikely that he rebounds. He hasn't been, in my mind, even though he had a good point total in his first year, a top line power forward in his 2 years at Edmonton. He hasn't shown that level of two-way play. I think he's a third liner at this point, but I do think he'll be back in Edmonton. What's your take?
Well, that's the most likely thing. I mean, I've read things that suggested that he'd be moved out for a problem contract coming back, that the Oilers would still have to retain some of Lucic's contract, and then they would, over and above that, still have to throw in a sweetener like a draft pick. And I'm thinking, if you got to do all of those things, the hell with it. You know, I mean, one of them, I mean, sure, if you move him for, let's say, we'll call Andrew Shaw the bad contract, or yeah. I can make a joke here and say Mike Hoffman, contract. Yeah. And if you're doing that and you're getting it back, then there shouldn't be a lot of sweetening involved, because you're probably giving up the better hockey player in that deal, and you're taking on some other team's mistake in terms of the contract front. So some of that's going to balance out, and to have to do a couple other things, or God forbid, throw in Jesse Puljujarvi, like I read in at least one scenario, you know.
Who thinks up these
I'd
things?
The gravity, you know, the core of the situation suggests he's most likely to just return here and hopefully redeem himself with a lot better season. You know, when you look at his record, he's had, you know, he had one bad season during the lockout season of 2013, when he got 27 points. And otherwise, you know, he was 62, 61, 59, 44. That was kind of bad. 55, 50. Like, he was a consistent producer. Now, at some point, maybe he falls off a cliff, and maybe this point was last Christmas, and we don't know that yet. But it's a non-zero chance that he, you know, bounces back from that season to be a better player. I mean, actually, it's almost hard to imagine he won't be a better player than he was in the second half of last year.
I think he'll score more. I don't think he's going to be much better of a two-way player, honestly, Bruce. I think we've seen two years running pretty much the same player. I mean, he's had some success in the power play, which boosted his point totals in the first year, which is great. Power play success is fantastic. But to me, he's just a little slow for the game. And I don't see him. I think if the bet is he's going to bounce back and be – 50 to 60 point guy, I just think that's a bad bet. Like, I don't think that's going to happen maybe in one of 10 cases. If that's the thinking of the Oilers, I think they got it wrong. The idea should be, well, we got kind of a guy who's shown himself to be, over the last two years, kind of a third line winger. And are we willing to have that guy on the team? And does he bring enough in that third line role to merit being on the team, even with that big paycheck? Or is it better to take a bit of a poison pill and move them? I think should be the calculation.
I understand that. And a bit of a poison pill, yeah. A lot of a poison pill. I mean, at a certain point, if you do all three of those things of take a bad contract back, still eat part of Lucic's contract, and still have to sweeten the pot, I'm not that interested because, you know, you wind up with different, you wind up with a different headache, but it's still a headache.
Yeah. Here's what Matthias Brunet, who's got a huge Twitter following in Montreal, he's a hockey writer for La Presse in Montreal. Here's the deal that he was thinking about. Marc Bergevin would manage a masterstroke to convince Chiarelli to give him his 10th choice overall in 2018, as well as Lucic in return for choices in the second and third rounds and maybe a prospect. So it's Lucic and the Oilers' 10th pick for a second and a third round pick.
Huh. Okay. Well, at least they're not dumping Andrew Shaw in the same transaction.
A 10th round pick has about a third of a chance of being a really good NHL player. And a second round pick, I think, has about a 10th of a chance, if that, of being a really good NHL player. Uh-huh. So that's...
And 10 overall
yeah, has got 10th overall.
A pretty decent likelihood.
Well, it's got about one third of the time, mm-hmm. a player you take at 10th overall on average is going to turn out to be a pretty good, a good NHL hockey player. And another third of the time, he's going to be just a marginal player. And the other third of the time, the 10th overall pick will be a bust.
Right. Okay.
So, you know, it's that prospect of maybe finding that player who is going to be a really good NHLer is very enticing for teams. And I think there's no way Chiarelli will give up the 10th overall pick in a deal.
Montreal has already expressed that they were interested in Lucic when he was a free agent, but they're not interested in making a deal for him now. And he's expressed that he doesn't want to go to Canada. Yeah, I mean, if he doesn't like Edmonton,
non-starter.
Imagine going to Montreal where you're under the microscope in both official languages.
There was a guy writing on a New York Rangers hockey blog, though, where they feel in New York they really need toughness, some of the bloggers at least. Uh-huh. And the GM apparently expressed the same thing, that they weren't big and tough enough. And he was writing much more favorably about the Rangers getting Lucic in a trade. So maybe that could happen, Bruce. Maybe there is this team out there who's going to go on past reputation, who still believes Lucic can bounce back, which some people are going to believe. It's believed by many people in Edmonton. And, you know, wants that toughness and is willing to take this player. And maybe that's why Chiarelli has some confidence that he can make something happen here.
Well, apparently the new dude in Carolina there thinks his team got pushed around last year and he's looking for toughness and I'm not quite sure what you could build around
Lucic in a second round pick for Justin Falk. There's my Oilers centric trade of the day.
Okay. How about Lucic in number 10 for number 2?
That's your Oilers-centric trade
sure
of the day.
Is.
Now you're talking, Bruce.
A couple of rounds.
You one-upped me. No, you didn't just one-up me. You by an order of 5. That was good. All right, Bruce. Well, let's leave it there. We're getting closer to the draft and maybe something's going to start to move in terms of
next week is going to be busier than this week.
Yeah, we'll see Benning get signed probably, unless there's going to be a fight there. I think he signs for Cajula money. That's my bet that
he's in there somewhere. I was expecting both of them to be 2 years and somewhere between $1 and $2 million. I don't get too hyped on the significant digits, but you know, somewhere in that low end range. And honestly, they're both sort of marginal NHLers 2 years in, but with some promise. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Benning somewhere in that territory.
Yeah, I don't see the Oilers, they don't have a lot of other unfinished business, do they?
Stroman Nurse, that's the big two.
Yeah, so and you know,
those are significant issues that's going to take some working.
Alrighty. Well, Bruce, thanks for talking today.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.